Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. We are here. It's Monday, September 18th, 2017. And we are here to talk about week two of the NFL season. And joining me is once upon a time, maybe a frequent guest on the podcast, but someone who has not been seen all that recently on the show, Mina Kimes of ESPN. Mina, how are you doing? Are you doing well?
Yep.
Okay. Let me just ask you, let me just start out there. Let me get the elephant in the room out of the way. You haven't been appearing on the podcast all that much very frequently. Why do you think that is? Well, what do you attribute that to? Is that appropriate, you think?
I don't know what I have to say.
I don't.
I think I misdid that quote. Shoot. I was trying to do the Kyrie, but, and you also should have done a Stephen A voice. And I feel that that would have conveyed it better.
That won't get me in trouble at all. You are someone who you can get away with that kind of stuff at ESPN. I do not have that kind of clout. Stephen A would squash me like a bug.
I do the Stephen A voice at least once a week and no one notices. I think that means my voice is slowly merging towards his voice. Hopefully, anyways. He's kind of my icon.
Just trying to think of an NFL player who I can say is on crack! But
there you go.
We don't have that kind of volume on the show, typically. But we have a lot to get to. We have a lot to get to. I'm happy you're here joining us. We will get to perhaps some teams you may have an interest in later on in the show. But let's start with the marquee matchup, I would say, of week two. And a game that kind of went very similar to how it went in the NFC Championship game last year, Falcons-Packers.
Yeah. Well, it was certainly the marquee matchup and obviously was not as advertised.
Yes.
But they were so diminished. I don't know. I just don't, with the Green Bay and their injury, I mean, it just didn't feel like we were seeing, what this matchup could look like, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this was a game where even coming into the contest, the Packers were down their top two tackles, and David Bakhtiari and Brian Bulaga, which certainly created some opportunity to the Falcons. And then on top of that, it got worse as the game went on. They lost Jordy Nelson, and they lost Mike Daniels, who maybe their two best players on either side of the football outside of Aaron Rodgers, after seven snaps each. So not a surprise necessarily that they lost, that they weren't as competitive, given that they were down maybe four Pro Bowlers or four Pro Bowl caliber talents at key positions. And then you lose Randall Cobb during the game. Matt Brooks was already out. I mean, this was a team that, even though we're 2 weeks into the season now, you have to be seriously concerned about their depth. And obviously it's going to play up against teams like the Falcons, but even against lesser teams, I mean, you could see the Vikings, for example, giving the Packers serious trouble if their tackles aren't healthy.
And I think Devon House went out at one point, right? Mm-hmm. Who's been elevated to a starter at cornerback. I mean, it was just brutal. I didn't know that they were missing both tackles when I picked them to win. I feel all of those injuries are brutal in very specific ways. I think the Jordy injury may be the most understated, because we've seen at various points over the last few years Rodgers playing without him, and it's increasingly obvious. Well, it's always been obvious that his timing with him is so different from the other wide receivers. With Devontae Adams, I just feel like he's never been quite on the same page as Adams as the way he is with Nelson, setting aside the fact that Nelson is obviously just very skilled and talented and fast and good at getting open. So I don't know. Once he went out, I just kind of felt like, I just don't see them winning this.
Yeah, and I mean, you're talking about a team now where really they were one-dimensional for most of the game. Their running game was pretty much non-existent. Yeah. Ty Montgomery had 10 carries for 35 yards. Jamal Williams, 2 for 6. So they really weren't running the football very effectively. They were down to one of their top three wide receivers for most of the game with Devontae Adams as their primary receiver. And I thought Aaron Rodgers played fine. I mean, we can talk about that fumble in a minute. But outside of that interception right before the first half to Devin Trufant, I thought it was overall a pretty solid performance, by Rodgers' standards. Certainly, I didn't think he held them back in terms of winning the game.
Yeah, and obviously, in addition to the injuries, there were the penalties. I mean, you mentioned the fumble that came after he hit Randall Cobb, right? For it was over 30 yards, and then it was called back because of the Bennett first.
Very
the first Bennett OPI. Yeah, it was, and then they showed it back later. And it was kind of in that 1 yard range, and I think Bennett said he was running a drag route or something. But they were down 17-7 at that point, so I just can't help but feel like it could have been a very different game if a few calls had gone in the other direction.
Yeah, I mean, even if you don't think they're going to score on that drive, you're at least probably going to be moving the ball. You're not going to be stuck deep in your own territory. You know, with a few seconds left in the second quarter, you're probably going to end up just, you know, getting to midfield and the half's going to end. But realistically, the Falcons pick the ball off. They score four plays later. It was sort of the worst possible outcome for what the Packers were trying to do. And then, of course, the Falcons score at the beginning of the third quarter, you know, for the Packers, they run one play from scrimmage, and on the second play from scrimmage, Rodgers is sacked. He throws a pass, which I don't think this was a fumble. Desmond Trufant picked it up and returned it for a touchdown.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a fumble in real time.
It was absolutely going forward. Like when every time they showed it on the screen, it was very clear to me. I don't know. I mean,
are you surprised they didn't
overturn it?
Yeah.
I guess, you know, if it's close on that kind of call, mm-hmm. you tend to err on the side of confirming it. But I don't know, just every single time they showed it, it was so obviously, you know, with the line going forward. I just mm-hmm. I didn't quite understand it. I don't know. And then the Falcons later benefited from, is this the one that Mike McCarthy flipped out on when they ran a pick play and scored the touchdown?
Yes,
is that
I
when
believe he got so. The yeah. penalty? Yeah, when he got his return penalty for being an angry dad on the sidelines.
I don't know. Just it was a weird game. That's all I feel because of everything we've been talking about.
I was just watching Mike McCarthy, and I in my head, I could not stop picturing him yelling at somebody at like a Blockbuster in 1997.
Were you angry with the field goal instead of going for it? Was it the third quarter?
I believe it was the third quarter, yeah. Of course I was angry.
How'd you
at
feel?
It. You know me. You know what I do. You know how I feel about things. It was ridiculous. Just trolling me. I mean, realistically, I don't think it mattered in terms of the game. I don't think the Packers are going to win either way, but it does speak to McCarthy's McCarthyness. I was going to say McCarthyism, but that seems like maybe the wrong word to use. McCarthyness, or I guess is the closest way I can put it. Did you see the Martellus Bennett play where he like leveled a Falcons defender with a chip at the line of scrimmage, and then that guy fell over and knocked out a second defender, and then he ran across the formation and caught a pass?
Was in the fourth quarter, right?
I forget exactly when it was in the game, but it was so good.
Martellus Bennett, he had quite a roller coaster of a game. Mm-hmm. It's always shocking to me how huge he looks on the field. I don't know. It's just something when he lines up and blocks, it's just like, oh my God. Like it looks like when you're watching a game and then they blow up a guy, yeah. you know, on the screen to look like bigger than the rest of them, but it's mm-hmm. just real life. But yeah, he had a few costly drops as well.
Sure.
I think the penalties were probably more impactful. I don't know. Here's my question to you. Do you feel like you learned anything about the Packers after this game?
I think I learned more about the Falcons than the Packers, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think it's been tough because we've seen the Packers play the Seahawks and the Falcons, so they're playing two of the best teams in the NFC, realistically. So I think it's probably unfair to do something. But after this, they have the Bengals, the Bears, and then they have the Cowboys and Vikings and Saints before their bye. But, I mean, you get two easy games for them in the next 2 weeks, and I feel like we're going to get a lot, you know, it's going to seem a lot more like the typical Packers we know over the next 2 weeks, I would figure, on offense.
What do you feel like you learned about the Falcons from this game?
I learned they can keep a lead, so we don't have to have that conversation anymore. I mean, as someone who had to go through that the year for the Super Bowl, had to go through that story on a weekly basis, isn't it nice just to be like, okay, well, the Falcons had a lead. The Packers made a little bit of a comeback and held on to it. Like, we can chill for a while now, right?
With the Raiders, did you see, did they troll Seattle, or was that just something on Twitter that they were calling Seattle at the line, the goal line with Marshawn Lynch? By the way, I was watching this game at a bar. I didn't watch the Raiders game. I was watching the Seahawks game, the afternoon games at a bar, but there were a bunch of Raiders fans there, and they were all screaming, beast mode, beast mode. And I turned around and Cordarrelle Patterson was scoring a touchdown. I saw him and I was like, holy, like Marshawn Lynch hasn't looked like that in like years. And then I was like, wait a second. I don't know. Did you have an eye on that game? Like, how good did he actually look, Lynch?
Marshawn? He was fine. Like, he wasn't incredible. I think the Jets are, you know, they weren't all that impressive. But it wasn't like he had impressive numbers. He had 12 carries for 45 yards. Like, I think he's going to play
They're using
a role.
Him the way they, yeah.
Like, he's going to play a role in the offense, and he's going to be useful. You know, I think he's going to be a guy that closes out games when they need someone to close out games, and he's going to be a guy who gets a few snaps here or there in terms of the regular offense, but it's not like he's going to be a like an every-down player for them.
I did watch his touchdown, and the offensive line, the hole that they opened up. I mean, it's just how much the contrast between running behind that line at times and what he had in Seattle that final year is just hilarious. But anyways, sorry, that was a tangent. So the Falcons.
Who also had injuries, too, in this game.
True. And Vic Beasley, I just saw, is out for quite a while, right?
A month, yeah. He has a partial hamstring tear. He's out for a month. They lost Ryan Schrader to a concussion. They were at tackle, so they really get some pressure on Matt Ryan through that. And, I mean, they lost Ricardo Allen and Brian Poole later in the game. But, like, these are guys who Beasley played past halftime. Allen played into the fourth quarter. Poole played into the fourth quarter. They lost Schrader early, but, I mean, you know, the Packers lost Nelson and Daniels pretty much in the first quarter. So that's... It just seems like a different thing to me in terms of where they were at and how much it impacted the game.
Yeah, I saw a lot of kudos for the Falcons' defense after this game, and I think it's undeniable that they're improved partially because the bar was so low over the last 2 years. But again, it's kind of, you know, facing two rookie. I mean, Ryan Murphy was it Ryan Murphy? John Murphy, sorry.
Kyle
Ryan
Murphy
is the Emmy Award winning director. Oh, Kyle Murphy.
Okay. Kyle Murphy.
Of Glee. Kyle Murphy, this was his second game, right? And then the right tackle or the other guy, it was his first game. So I don't really, I mean, there was one point, the Vic Beasley, Dontari Poe, Rogers sandwich.
Yeah.
It's just how often are they going to be in, you know, that particular situation? I mean, the line that Rodgers was playing behind was probably one of the worst of the weekend.
Sure. And I mean, you're talking about a line where heading into last season, there were four different starters among the five guys on the line. And those four guys were all on a good year Pro Bowl caliber offensive linemen in terms of Bakhtiari and Bulaga at tackle and then TJ Lang and Josh Sitton at guard. Those guys are all gone. And I mean... It'll work out. You know, I have more faith in the Packers fixing their offensive line than most teams. And once they get Bakhtiari and Bulaga back, they're going to be pretty decent on the edges, for sure. But, I mean, this definitely caps what they can do in terms of their ceiling. And it's the biggest weakness on an otherwise pretty good football team.
Yeah, I thought there were some bright spots on defense, too. I mean, I paid special attention to this because I own Julio Jones in, like, two leagues. And Kevin King kind of shut him down in the second half there. He looked pretty good, you know, the rookie cornerback from Washington. So
shocking!
They might have something
from Washington.
They might. He did look good, though. They might have something in him, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think that over the course of the year, they have so many guys back there that they're going to cycle through them and kind of figure out who can play and who doesn't play. And by the end of the year, you'd hope there's going to be, you know, the best possible secondary if they can keep those guys healthy. Do you want to talk about a team with a good secondary in the NFC West?
So, I was following this whole Kevin Durant fake Twitter burner account thing, and I was thinking if I ever started my own fake burner account, it would be just to air out all of my feelings about the Seahawks offensive line. By the way, I get like 30 tweets a day that are just about guys tweeting at me, Seattle's offensive line isn't good. Thank you. Wow, I had no idea. Thank you so much for this novel analysis. I really appreciate it. this is a really
to be fair. Thing. To be fair, those are all my burner accounts, though.
I mean, this was a very painful game.
It didn't seem fun at the very least. Even though if you're a Seahawks fan, the Seahawks won. Just watching it from afar, it just seemed like it was a. It seemed like a real grind and not in a, these defenses are great way. You know, the Seahawks pass defense looked pretty well, just more of a, there was not much happening in offense in these two games or in this game.
Well, it's interesting because I think there's been times over the last, you know, during the Russell Wilson era, which when Seattle really looks like a different team in two halves, they've always looked better in the second half and often scored more. And a lot of that is by design. You know, that when you are a run first team, you tend to look better in the second half once the run defense on the other side is kind of gassed. Mm-hmm. In the last two games, they've looked really different in the fourth quarter in a way that's kind of interesting and worth plumbing. I mean, the Russell Wilson has in this fourth quarter, I mean, all of a sudden he just started running the read option and keeping it. And they switched to no huddle in both mm-hmm. fourth quarters of the last two games. And I just wonder if – I know it's complicated because that's part of the strategy in a way, right? I mean, there's a reason why Chris Carson suddenly, you know, where Asiga's getting like a couple yards early on per carry, suddenly starts getting like 10+.
Right.
There's a reason why. It's part of the game script. But I can't help but wonder if Russell Wilson can kind of open up the offense earlier in the game so they're not in this situation so often.
I mean, it's telling that when they're desperate, when they need plays, that's what they go to. And that's not 2016 or 2017. That's been the case for years. Even in the Packers Completely. Comeback in the NFC Championship game, you think about what they went to in that game. They went back to the read option for quick points and quick yards late. So I think it's a thing where they don't – it might be like their version of the death lineup, which I'm making a very generous and aggressive comparison between sports and making those two things. Like, but it's almost like maybe they're afraid to risk – that sort of offense with Russell and the sort of fear of getting him hurt and having him sort of, you know, put himself out there, which I don't think he's necessarily more likely to get hurt doing that than he would be as a traditional quarterback, to be honest. But maybe that's their thinking. I don't know. But I do agree with you. I think they look like a fundamentally significantly better offense when they're doing that sort of stuff and going up tempo and playing with the read option than they are doing what they've been doing over the first three quarters of these last two games.
Yeah, I mean, the touchdown to Paul Richardson in the fourth quarter was just sort of vintage Russell Wilson, right? Three guys in pursuit, rolling to his left, throwing mm-hmm. on his back foot. And when you watch that, it's crazy how much more comfortable he looks making that kind of throw.
Yeah.
And we talked about injuries. I think it's sometimes overstated how much quarterbacks are like making themselves vulnerable when they're outside the pocket. I think of Cam Newton, who actually gets sacked and hurt more often when he's in the pocket, I believe.
Yeah.
Wilson last year, the Sue injury, you know, he just got stepped on in the pocket. I mean, early in the game, he was running into sacks inside the pocket. Mm-hmm. I don't really buy that it's so much more dangerous for him to play in this style. And he also thrives when he plays like this, and it clearly opens up the run game. Obviously, that's combined with timing as well. So I really wonder if there could be some sort of changes or adjustments to be made over the next few weeks for this offense.
Oh, that seems like such a wonderful world. It's not the world we live in. I really don't feel like the Seahawks change things on offense, like get rid of their offensive line coach or not do the same things on their offensive line for years on end. I don't know. That just seems unlikely.
It's rough. Did you watch Chris Carson? What do you think of him?
He looks good. I mean, my bandwagon. You know I was on the CJ ProSize bandwagon heading into the year, and this was not a good game for that bandwagon. We were shedding people left and right. He dropped he dropped a pass in the end zone. Had another drop later on, I believe. Didn't get a carry. Looked pretty inconsistent. I thought Chris Carson looked fine. I mean, I think at the end of the day, you know, he's not someone who's going to make or break the offense. I think it has more a function of, you know, if the line is working in terms of run blocking, if they're doing a good job of, you know, creating holes, throwing teams off balance. I think he's going to have plays to make, but it has to be in terms of the spending that the Seahawks made this offseason, in terms of the guys they've signed. I mean, Eddie Lacy was a healthy scratch in this game. Luke Jokel looks awful. I mean, he does not look good at all. He looked better, I guess, this week than he did in week one, but it wasn't good. I mean, it's just not that offseason spending, relative spending spree for the Seahawks just looks bad through 2 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, the only, well, and this wasn't even really the off season, but Sheldon Richardson, I thought, looked you know, very disruptive and good. But yeah, those players are complete zeros so far. Jimmy Graham also was awful.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
You know, if you can't block, which you know is, you can't drop third downs. Like there were actually quite a few drops, and it was raining. You know, Wilson was sailing a few passes, and I hope that was because of the rain. But the drops were brutal. You mentioned ProSize. Tanner McAvoy dropped a sure touchdown. You know, so a couple drops go another way. This looks like a very different game, certainly. I have to say, though, I was impressed by the 49ers front seven, particularly the front four. I thought DeForest Buckner, and we in our podcast before the season, I said, this is where I want to see improvement on the Niners because clearly it's where they've invested everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, you just see that. They knocked down Russell Wilson 10 times on, I believe, 42 dropbacks on Sunday. So they were able to control the pocket. I mean, we'll see what happens in terms of them playing real offensive lines, perhaps, in the weeks to come. I mean, they played Carolina's offensive line, which especially a tackle can be hit or miss and certainly can be inconsistent. We'll see what happens, but certainly some promise there for sure in terms of what you saw over the course of the season. Can I give you some perhaps some reasons to be optimistic about the Seahawks, given how pessimistic it seems like Seahawks Twitter is through 2 weeks.
Please, let's hear. Okay,
so number one, the pass defense is really good. It turns out that having Earl Thomas makes a big difference in terms of what you can do as a pass defense.
He is incredible. I tweeted this earlier, but I was kind of rewatching some of the highlights, and I watched the Frank Clark sack non-safety. I still don't really understand what happened there, but Earl Blitz, which they never run safety blitzes, and was like 2 feet behind Hoyer. I mean, if you freeze any disruptive defensive play, he is so close to the ball. He looks 100%, which was a question coming into the season.
For sure. I mean, he looks like the guy everyone had heading into previous years, which is incredible. Brian Hoyer was 15 of 27 for 99 yards in this game. Like, given how bad they were in so many other facets of the game, Seattle, like they won the game because their pass defense was good enough for their offense to finally catch up and do something. Even though the run defense was a little, it was bad, but it wasn't like, I think the one long Carlos Hyde run kind of excuse. Like, they were, it's certainly not their best performance ever against the run, but, you know, it's one bad play, and then I think a kind of mediocre performance otherwise.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it was anything to be too. And I also think Carlos Hyde is good. I've always thought he was good. But yeah, I'm not. I have no concerns about this defense.
Mm-hmm. Okay, none, so other whatsoever. Stuff. Other stuff. The offense. It probably won't score one touchdown on their five trips to the red zone like has been the case so far this year. They're not as bad as the Bengals, who I looked it up. They've been into the red zone 6 times. They have 9 points total. They have 3 field goals and 6 trips to the red zone and 2 turnovers. So they're not quite that bad, but that's going to regress towards the mean. I think their offense is going to be okay. The drops, I mean, they had drops for touchdowns today or yesterday. So realistically, that stuff's going to bounce back. And the other thing we've learned from the first month of the year, even though the Rams are perhaps better than you might expect, the NFC West is bad. Like, it's not going to take a ton to win this division. The Cardinals had to squeak one out over the Colts in a game where they looked pretty awful. You know, the Rams, I thought, they've been okay so far. Certainly better than I would have expected. But Niners, even though they might be competitive, I just don't think they don't appear to be all that good. This is more a game where the Seahawks were struggling and the Niners are really showing me all that much. So they still have a 68.8% chance of winning the NFC West Pro Football Power Index. And then, I have one more thing for you. Schedule's pretty easy over the next few weeks. It's not like they're going to play a ton of tough teams. They have Tennessee, which is, to be fair, a pretty tough matchup on the road. But Colts and Rams before the bye. And then afterwards, Giants, Texans, Washington, and Cardinals. So, you know, would it shock me if they went 6-1 or 5-2 in those games? Not at all. I think it's probably the most plausible outcome.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about Denver-Dallas, but all I'll say about that is the NFC is wide open.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not like the AFC where there's, I think, 3 or 4 teams that are clearly kind of the cream de la crop. Like, is that right? The cream of the crop? Yeah. I said cream de la crop, you said cream which de definitely la crop. Isn't. Yeah, I did. Yeah.
It's okay. I regret it. I wasn't going to call you on it, but you decided to bring it up, so.
Anyways, I don't think there's a team that's going to run away with the NFC at this point.
What it is cream of the crop? And
the cream of the crop is, you know, the best piece of wheat that comes out of the crop that you make your stew with. It's very obvious to me.
Sorry, that's the Yale degree coming into play here. I don't know what that means.
I'm a literary writer.
You should have that on your resume. I'm a literary writer. Mina Kimes.
I'll save my fake Twitter. We'll tweet.
Mina Kimes is a real literary writer. You should be impressed. I mean, you know, I'm going to talk about Broncos, Cowboys on Wednesday at a little deeper depth on the Wednesday Nickel Package Show, which you, of course, host an episode of on Thursday, but we can't talk about
Subscribe.
That. We can't talk about that. It's not time for plugs yet, Mina. You know that. Come on.
Oh, sorry. My bad.
we'll leave it in the show.
My fake Twitter just tweeted about it.
We're going to leave it in the show, but we have to go to break now because you infringed on plug time. But we'll get back to that after the break. More Bill Barnwell Show coming in a moment. But first, guys, we're 2 weeks into the NFL season, and you're probably in a bit of a football bubble right now. If you're listening to a football podcast, you're probably a little too dedicated to football. And I'm saying that as someone who really depends on you to listen to football podcasts. But you're obviously paying a lot of attention. That's good. Of course, totally reasonable to do that. But you may be neglecting your loved ones. Spending weekends watching college football on Saturday, watching NFL on Sunday, you may not be presenting your best self to the people around you who care about you. And I don't want that to happen. I want the people around you to love you and cherish you. And because of that, I think something you might want to consider doing is going to 1-800-Flowers.com. Because right now, if you're a listener to the show, you can get a 36 for 36 offer. Is that better than 30 for 30? You might say so. 30 for 30, I believe, won an Emmy. So this is like the Emmy of flowers. 36 for 36. You can get 36 autumn roses for $36, which I'm not that good at math, but if I think I did the long division here, I have it calculated. Yes, it's $1 per rose. That's a great deal. It's a beautiful arrangement of fall, red, orange, and yellow roses, which will leave your partner stunned without spending a fortune. These gorgeous roses are picked at their peak and shipped overnight to ensure freshness. And it's a small price to pay, given how much you've been focusing on your fantasy football team. And the winnings from a couple weeks of high scores or one nice DraftKings performance might be enough to get you that $36 deal. So if you want to pick up 36 autumn roses for only $36, go to 1-800-Flowers.com, click the radio icon, enter in my promo code, which is Barnwell. My last name, Barnwell. That's 1-800-Flowers.com, code Barnwell, and hurry, this offer ends on Friday. All right, welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN, joined by Mina Kimes, ESPN personality and literary writer, to discuss week two of the NFL season. And let's get to some news. There's a bunch of injuries certainly impacting things. It feels like more than normal, but I don't know what the baseline is anymore. I just feel like everyone gets hurt every week, and it just makes me very sad. Number one of which, Marshall Yanda, maybe one of the best guards in football, certainly a top three or four interior offensive lineman in the NFL. The latest Raven to be done for the season, in a season that has just appeared to be the season where the Ravens, everyone gets hurt, and they keep winning because they're 2-0 against two bad teams. But now I would say their best player at any position is done for the year.
That's, I was trying to gauge like how much does this hurt the Ravens, and I concluded I have no idea because it's, I mean, I don't know. I didn't expect their offense to score more than a touchdown a game anyways. Mm-hmm. And are the Ravens good?
No. I mean, they're not good, right? But they've beaten now, they beat the Bengals who looked terrible. Browns. And they beat the Browns who didn't look very good yesterday. And honestly, had opportunities to be competitive. And the bad news is next week they play the Jags. I'm not sure the Jags are any good. So that could be a real hot start for a team that may actually be pretty bad. I don't know. Maybe the Jags will beat them. It's not out of the question. But, I mean, watching them play, they've made a bunch of mistakes. They leave plays on the field. The defense looks great, to be fair. They have a defense that's creating a ton of turnovers, but they're creating so many turnovers that it's really hard to judge whether they're going to be good when they're not. Right. You know, just creating, forcing four picks a game. Like, that's not going to keep up over the course of the entire season. And there were guys are open, you know, even in the Browns game, there were guys who were open who DeShone Kizer and Kevin Hogan were missing. And sometimes missing to the point where, you know, their pass that should have been a touchdown was an interception instead. So we'll see. I have to admit, I'm pretty skeptical of them so far. But yeah, Yanda being done for the year is brutal. I mean, it'd be one thing if they had their entire line healthy, but they're already down. What's his name?
Urshel
retired. Nico Siragusa, who was their fourth-round pick, who was going to possibly start at guard, is done for the year. They had to sign Austin Howard this offseason to play at tackle. He's only been there for a few weeks after he's being cut by the Ravens. So, I mean, their offensive line is at best a serious work in progress. Maggie is making the perfect time to sift through her beanbag bed to try and find a very comfortable sleeping position. But yeah, I mean, they're off the line. You know, it'd be one thing if it was just Yanda, but so many injuries at tight end, at running back now, Terrence West possibly hurt, Danny Woodhead out indefinitely, along the offensive line. There's just, it's, you can only overcome so many things. When you have someone like Yanda, who's like the base of your team, someone you can count on as being a superstar player, even if it's at a not as important position, perhaps when it comes to being a guard, like, at some point, you just have nothing to fall back on. You have nothing to lean on and say, okay, this is what we can do and this is what we're going to be good at. Like, you're just sort of hoping.
Yeah. So it's crazy. I mean, they used to just be reliably one of the top three offensive lines in the NFL as recently as, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And kind of like the Bengals, where it just kind of quietly fell off. And then now to lose their best lineman, it just seems it's going to be brutal for that offense.
Yeah. Speaking of brutal, on the other side of the field, Corey Coleman. Second year in a row, he's broken his hand. Mm. Last year in practice, this year, I believe during this Ravens game, he's going to be out indefinitely. That was last year, I think it was 6 weeks. It's just, I mean, you have to feel for the Browns at some point. Like, even if you think they're doing things wrong or they're drafting the wrong guys, like, how can you count on your wide receiver not to break his hand twice in two seasons? And in week two, I think both times.
That's a weird, such a weird injury too, because I know it just doesn't seem like when we think of injury prone guys, oh, he, you know, his hips or he hurts his ankle, but to break your hand 2 years in a row is such a fluky, terrible thing.
Yeah, that's a bummer. I mean, given how their receiving corps is shaping up, Kenny Britt, I mean, they appear to be, it looks like they basically want to dump Kenny Britt after two games.
Jackson hates him. It's so obvious.
It's really shocking. It's kind of staggering how quickly he turned on Kenny Britt. So I don't know. I mean, they're stuck with him for a little while at least. I don't think they can really get out of that contract until the end of the year. I guess they have nothing to really, they could cut him if they were so inclined, but there's nothing behind them on the depth chart. You're looking at Sammy Coates, Ricardo Lewis, Rashad Higgins. Oh, sorry. Excuse me. Kaysen Williams. Behind Corey. Maybe he'll get more snaps with Corey Coleman-Hurd if he's healthy. But yeah, certainly it's not looking great there in Cleveland. Who else got injured? Greg Olsen.
Yes. That I think could be a serious, like, you know, in terms of these, we talked about the NFC being kind of wide open. The Panthers, I have not been incredibly impressed with over the first 2 weeks. And I think losing Olsen is just, you know, Cam Newton, I think we've talked about this. There's moments where you see what they're trying to do with the offense and the whole evolution of the Panthers offense and blah, 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 and the quick pass. And it looks like it's working, but then he still is struggling, very clearly, I think, struggling with accuracy. And then to lose Olsen, who's, you know, the most reliable pass catcher on that offense, I think could be a really bad thing for them.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's been a lot of plays where I've watched them this year, and I'm going to get to them a little more on Wednesday as well. We talk with Jeff Schwartz. I've been watching them pretty closely, and, you know, there are a lot of plays where Cam will have a throwing lane, and he'll basically conjure every ounce of torque he has in his body to try and throw the football as hard as possible, which he's done in the past, and he's got away with it.
Yeah.
Like, he's thrown a ton of his velocity in, like, slants and those sort of quick dig routes is incredible, typically. But coming off a shoulder surgery, he just has not had the same kind of zip on his passes. And I think he'll get it back. I don't think it's, like, a permanent thing. But you see, like the lane comes open, he throws the pass, and it's just a step too slow. And guys break it up or are able to get to it, or, you know, the lane gets knocked away. I mean, it's hopefully going to get better, but he's done that, and there have been a couple plays where he's just missed guys for open touchdowns. Ed Dixon in week one, then Christian McCaffrey last week where it should have been an easy touchdown and he didn't hit it. So there's still question marks there. And Olsen certainly being absent is not going to help matters. Elsewhere, I'm not even sure what to make of this yet because it seemed like it was a thing that wasn't going to be a thing until it was a thing on Sunday, which was Sam Bradford, who looked great in week one against the Saints, as everyone does, apparently. And you figure, okay, well, you know, came out with some knee soreness after the week, and it was all no big deal. Like, you figure he'll be fine, and he'll, you know, he'll play through it. And then he couldn't play on Sunday. I mean, he wasn't able to suit up. Case Keenum played. The Vikings lost to the Steelers. And afterwards, Mike Zimmer gave that really weird quote about Sam Bradford being fine.
So strange. Sam is fine. He might play one game from now. He might play six games from now. Either way, he's fine. Well, no, he's not. If he plays 6 weeks from now, he is not fine.
I think
something
this is
about like ligaments or what's the?
I would assume it's something about ligaments. It appears to be some soreness there based, and I think it's the knee where he's tore his ACL twice, or a knee in which he tore his ACL at least once.
Oh God!
And then it appears to be some kind of just residual soreness where I assume when Mike Zimmer says that thing about Sam is fine, like, he's talking from the perspective of a guy who's had 9 eye surgeries over the past year. He's like, compared to me, yeah, you're doing fine. Like, you're going to survive. Like, you can see out of your eyes.
Well, this is all complicated by the fact that Teddy can come back mid-season, right? I think that's what they're saying.
Week 6, he can come back, yeah. I mean,
this could get really interesting really quickly.
It does when you have two guys who are both free agents to be, where you assume the Vikings are going to commit to one of them. And they both obviously have serious injury concerns. We don't know what's happening with Teddy Bridgewater's, you know, rehab. He could be ready in 6 weeks. He could not be ready all season. I honestly don't know at this point. But I mentioned this on Twitter. I mean, if you're the Vikings, Sam Bradford looked awesome against the Saints. And I don't think he's going to be that good all year, but he looked totally fine last year in terms of being a viable starter. I don't think the trade for him made sense, but I think they got a better Sam Bradford than they could have expected. And, you know, they have Pat Shurmur, who's his old offensive coordinator. The infrastructure is there to build around Sam Bradford. Can you realistically sit there and give him, you know, $60 million, $70 million in guarantees over the first 3 years of his deal, knowing that he has this knee, you know, has knee injuries that are, you know, going to pop up randomly throughout the week? I mean, after one game?
I mean, if you feel like the level he played at in week one, did we just enter a wind tunnel? obviously, he's not playing Saints defense every week. But, you know, that combination of offensive line play and his accuracy and, yeah, I mean, he looked really good, as you said. If he was able to repeat or come within, I think, 70% of that, 60 to 70% of that over the next first 4 to 5 weeks of the season, it's so difficult because I absolutely think they would extend him. And I agree, though. I don't even if he did that, I don't know if it would be the right decision given his injury history. It just seems like an impossible position. There's no right move.
Yeah, but I mean, when you need to give up a first round pick for a guy like Bradford with with 2 years left in his contract when they traded for him, like you're kind of assuming that risk. Like you're putting yourself in a situation where you're gonna hope that he's gonna be that guy. And so, I don't know what I would do. I think it's gonna be a really fascinating decision from that perspective. And maybe it'll be decided for them. Maybe Bradford will have another knee injury and that will, you know, drop his value. I hope it doesn't. I mean, I have been skeptical of Bradford in the past, but I'm certainly not rooting for the guy to get injured and have another knee surgery. I mean, again, I looked it up. This was the knee where he had the two ACL tears. So, it sucks. I mean, it's really not a fun thing to deal with when, especially given how good he looked and how excited the Vikings fan might've been after that first game.
And they obviously are more familiar with Teddy's status than any of us and, you know, where he is and whether or not he can come back. So we'll learn a lot about that based on how they treat Bradford as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think Case Keenum's fine in terms of being a backup. He was on my 53-man perfect roster, which should tell you how good I think he is. But, you know, Bradford's still a better quarterback, and it's not as if their schedule it's not especially hard, but there are a lot of teams who, especially when it comes to a possible wild card race, you'd hope they'd be beating. When they play Tampa and Detroit the next 2 weeks, at Chicago, then hosting Green Bay and Baltimore, you know, they're going to have to bank some wins given that they have 5 road games in 7 weeks over the course of the fall. So it's going to be tough. I mean, this is kind of a point where they're going to need to win some games, and Bradford being around would be very helpful. The other injury I'm going to mention very briefly, Mitch Morse, the Chiefs center, sprained his foot, still waiting to hear back on that. But I know I don't have a lot to say about it. I'm just like, oh, it's injury, but I need to get more news. But that is I would say personally, a great segue to Eagles Chiefs, which I thought that was the most entertaining game.
Same here.
Chargers Dolphins was entertaining in a very different and upsetting and sad way. But in terms of, I don't blame you. Let's not talk about it for both of our sakes.
I got a lot of tweets about it. Like, oh, your boy Q. And because it was during the Seattle game, I was like, I'm bearing this emotional load right now. I can't take on another dagger to the heart. I love this Chiefs Eagles game. It was interesting also because I think Saints Patriots was kind of supposed to be the fun game of the week. And you wrote in your column this week all about sort of this idea of good and bad, you know, NFL play. And for so many people, good is synonymous with just lots of offense, I feel like. I thought we'll talk a little bit about the Patriots-Saints game. I thought that game was a real stinker. It was really boring to me. And whereas I thought this Eagles-Chiefs game was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And Patriots-Saints felt like a game where it was being played at, you know, it was like being played in a video game where the mode of difficulty was too easy. And so like everything was working. Like, you know, you tap the pass button and like, oh, of course that's complete because you hit the button. I thought it was supposed to say a fun game and a pretty well-played game. And I thought, honestly, it was a game where I came away and thought more of both teams. Like, I felt better about the Chiefs and Eagles being really good.
I thought, I'll start with the Chiefs first. I love watching this offense so much. Part of it is it's like fan fiction for the Seahawks offense in some ways. Like, what if we could run, like, jet sweeps and options and little shovel passes to our tight end and veer? I mean, it's just like, I tweeted this. I get fooled pre-snap by the Chiefs offense at least 3 times a drive.
I don't blame you.
You're not going to say me too?
I mean,
I was just waiting there for you.
I'm sorry. I do, but I don't even think about it. Like, I get fooled by everyone's offense pre-snap. Like, I think if you, I would love to do a test where I, like, you show me what the motion is before the snap, and then you pause it right at the snap, and you ask me, like, okay, what's this play going to be? I think I get it right, like, 7 times out of 100. I really do.
I mean, I just always assume Tyreek Hill has the ball, and I just watch him, and then Travis Kelce's like jumping into the end zone.
Yeah, I mean, this was a game where I figured maybe, given what they did in Week One in terms of all the option stuff, I thought, okay, well, maybe you do that to kind of beat the Patriots, and you have like a month to prepare for it. So maybe that's not going to be something they do over the course of the entire season. But they did more of it.
Nope.
certainly.
Nope.
Against the Eagles. You know, a team that is not the Patriots. Like, they are the opposite of the Patriots. They have very mediocre cornerbacks, and they lost and had guys get hurt during the game as well. But they're pretty good at safety, and they lost Rodney McLeod at safety, but Malcolm Jenkins is a very good cover safety. But they have a great defensive line, a great front fours. That's what they're built on, and the Patriots don't have that. So you'd figure maybe they'd be worried about getting Alex Smith killed if he's going to be doing a lot of option stuff, but it worked out fine. I thought they didn't run the ball especially well, but they created holes in their passing game with all that, the play action, all the movement. And Travis Kelce was great outside of the penalty, which, you know, it's just a problem with Travis Kelce in terms of taunting. But, you know, Kelce had 8 catches for 103 yards and 10 targets against the team that was number one in DVOA against tight ends last year. And that's, with the same personnel they're going to have this year. I thought it was really impressive.
Yeah, I saw 64 of his yards came after the catch, which it's incredible how he's still kind of underrated, I think. And part of it is because of what you referenced, which is his stupid, costly penalties and his, you know, clear Gronk poserism or whatever. And that's kind of discomforting. But he is such a physical marvel. You know, just the combination of speed and strength is so incredible. And the way they're using him now is just incredible to watch. I watched this Chiefs offense, and I really think that, I mean, the Eagles defense, as you mentioned, you know, obviously they're really imbalanced in terms of the secondary versus the front seven. Although I thought they had a new cornerback who acquitted himself pretty well. I don't remember his name. Do you know his name?
No, this is very frustrating because I was going to say the same thing and I also forgot his name.
Rasul Douglas.
Yeah, Rasul Douglas came in for Jalen Watkins, who was hurt, and did a very solid job. Rookie third round pick, and it may be a thing where he ends up, you know, carving out a starting role for himself with Watkins injured and Ronald Darby out indefinitely. So, I mean, for a guy who wasn't expected to be a great player from day one, he looked very solid yesterday.
So I DM'd you this on the other side of the ball. Okay, so you know when you see a movie, I'm trying to think of a movie I saw. Okay, did you see Tree of Life, the Terrence Malick movie?
No.
So I remember I saw that. It's a really arty movie. It's kind of like Boyhood, but crazier in some way. It's just insane.
I saw that on the box of the box of the DVD.
Boyhood, but crazier. Mm. I saw it on a date, and I remember walking out and being
"You saw Tree of Life on a date?"
Yes.
That's with your husband?
Then boyfriend. Yes.
Then boyfriend.
It was early on too in our relationship.
Crazy date suggestion.
I remember walking, well, it's not violent or upsetting, it's just kind of arty, right? And I remember walking out and being like, I think that was good, but maybe it wasn't good. Like, there was really good performances, but then the entire last third of the movie is just like a screensaver. It's very confusing. And I just kind of was like, I guess that was good. I don't know. I feel like I'm supposed to say that was good. And that's how I feel watching Carson Wentz. Like, I don't know if he's good. He is like Tree of Life to me. I feel completely ill-equipped to gauge his goodness right now.
Yeah, I don't
tell me if he's good, please.
Oh, well, I don't have that information. I would not think in my head to compare him to Tree of Life. I have to admit that was not the first thing that came to mind for me. But I think you can sort of make him into whatever you want. You know, I read a lot of recaps of him after Week One. I wrote one myself, and watching him closely, you know, there are places where he looked great. I mean, I'd say most of the time, honestly, in Week 1, he looked great. And I still have to watch the All-22 for Week 2 of this game because it's not up yet. But, I mean, he looked great for stretches. He was under pressure for a good chunk of time, which I'll get to in a second. But he overall, I mean, made a bunch of throws, had a couple big drops, one of which was Torrey Smith for a touchdown early on. But, you know, the interception wasn't his fault. I mean, the screen pass bounced, you know, there was pressure. It bounced off at a player's helmet. Chris Jones picked it off. But he still misses throws. I mean, there's still plays where he doesn't get the most out of what he can do, where he misses guys deep. There was one, it didn't count. It was like a reverse free play where there was an Eagles penalty and he chucked it deep to Alshon Jeffery, who was open, and he missed. Like, yeah, he put every ounce of his body into it and then missed Jeffery by like 4 yards. That's his weakness. I mean, he struggled to hit those deep throws. And not historically, but last year that was his big concern. The argument was, oh, well, he has no receivers. Once you get him receivers, he'll be fine. He has receivers who can get open downfield now, and the first 2 weeks he's been pretty bad on those throws downfield. So, I think he does some things really well, but I think it's going to work out for him in the long run. But just the overall package just isn't as satisfying as the highlights or you know, a typical play here or there might seem.
Yeah, well, now, so last year it was he doesn't have receivers, and now this year it's he doesn't have a run game, which there's some validity to. He threw it 46 times on Sunday. Like,
their
that's
running
not
game is a
tenable.
Problem.
It's, I mean, I don't, obviously, LeGarrette Blount is not who he was in New England, as so many players are not.
It's weird because the only people who are less effective outside of Massachusetts than LeGarrette Blount are the Affleck brothers. It's kind of staggering. I mean,
oh my gosh,
he had six snaps. He had six snaps this game. Didn't get a carry once, and it's 2 weeks into the season. Like, it's not even like there was no time for them to sour on him, and they're already done with him. It feels like.
But, and this is a problem of their own making. I mean, and again, as we saw so many times last season, they just turned to Darren Sproles as the lead back, which I love Darren Sproles. He is incredible, but that's not his role. And they had, I mean, we're seeing all of these running backs kill it, rookie running backs, right now. And, you know, they waited until the later rounds to pick up Donald Pumphrey, right?
Who's he was done for the year.
Yeah. So it just feels like they knew this was a problem. The same thing with the Seahawks, although they seem to have lucked out with Chris Carson. Just don't understand why you would pick up an older running back in free agency at this point instead of going for one early in the draft.
Yeah, I think even the price wasn't bad. It was, I think, $1.25 million maybe. But it's just, he's not going to be a part of your offense. And I think you have to know at some point what you want your offense to do. And realistically, it's not going to be to have Blount as a pass blocker or have him as someone who's going to be a viable threat to catch passes, even though he has two catches, one of which was for a touchdown so far this year. I mean, that's not going to be what you want to do on offense. Maybe we'll see what happens. I mean, the bigger concern might be, you know, left guard, which Isaac Sumala was a mess yesterday. Oof. Second week in a row. Various places have him for three or four sacks around the internet. Chris Jones, who's really good, looked like, you know, J.J. Watt's younger brother. Younger brother.
the heretofore unknown fourth Watt. That's the Chiefs, though. To be fair, a lot of that, I mean, Justin Houston, good heavens. Speaking of career rejuvenations,
he looks back.
I think that he is all the way back. So I don't think it's fair to judge the Eagles' O-line versus this defense necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. But certainly, given that he was not that good in week one either, I think it's the point where Sumalo is on pretty thin ice, because he's obviously the weakest point of that offensive line, which otherwise I think is pretty solid. I thought the Chiefs' offensive line was pretty good for most of this game, especially on that Kareem Hunt touchdown, where I'm going to do the graphic. By the time this was up, I'm probably going to do it on Twitter because I think it's I love doing it. It's the how many versions of Kareem Hunt could you fit in this hole?
I love that. A little cute. Like,
yes. Early, it's a chance to do Photoshop work, which I'm very, very good at. Early estimates are, I would say at least three Kareem Hunts could have fit in that hole. It is really, really impressive. But, you know, realistically, Kareem Hunt looks awesome. I mean, he looks like a franchise running back. And it's crazy to think that he would have probably been a backup if Spencer Ware hadn't got hurt, but it's too early to say, I guess. But there's just not many guys who I'm more excited to watch in the league right now in terms of people who are going to touch the football 15 times a game than Kareem Hunt.
So my last question is, I mean, the Chiefs basically at this point have the best resume, right, in the NFL in terms of victories. Do you see them as a viable Super Bowl contender?
This is the tough question. I answered this.
It's week two.
Let's
do this.
And I brought this up on SportsCenter. Like, the Chiefs are the favorites right now per the Football Power Index to win the Super Bowl. I mean, they have looking it up now, a 16.1% chance of winning the Super Bowl. Do you, like, that's so hard to believe, though.
Well, I just don't, any team in the same conference as the Patriots, like, that's not viable. You know, I mean, it's just, and also, I mean, the AFC West just doesn't make sense. The AFC is so top-heavy,
yeah.
I think, yeah, compared to the NFC, that I can't imagine that any of those teams has a greater chance.
Than the Falcons or the Packers or the Seahawks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. But I mean, they're certainly, if you had told me they were going to go 2-0 to start the season, I would have been shocked. And granted, I mean, they've been a little lucky in terms of a few things popping their way. Like, you know, you don't necessarily get that, the ball bouncing off of a helmet to your defensive end who picks it up for a sack or for an interception. Like, you know, stuff has gone their way. And we'll see what happens. I mean, you know, God knows, it's ironic, I guess, because the Eagles were a team that ran the Andy Reid offense, ran all those shovel passes and stuff, and didn't get a lot of them as seasons went on, and teams kind of saw them on film and were a little more effective against. Maybe the offense will slow down a little bit, I guess is what I'm saying, as the season goes on. But this team's really good. And, I mean, it would be more of a surprise if they didn't get to 10 or 11 wins. They're sort of typical.
Oh, yeah. They could start 5-0 easily. Yeah. And then the middle of their schedule gets a little bit hazier when they start playing the AFC West teams and then the Cowboys and the Giants. But then you go back to the Bills and Jets.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no question.
So I don't know if I'd say I'd feel confident about them making it to the Super Bowl by any means, but I do feel confident that they're going to be, you know, a playoff team for the umpteenth consecutive season with Andy Reid as head coach. All right, Mina, well, let's get to Patriots Saints in a moment. But before that, guys, I have some interesting facts for you here from the folks at Gillette. Did you know the tip of a Gillette razor blade is measured on an atomic scale? It means their blade edges are thinner than a single brain cell. And that precision is the work of many brain cells. The hundreds of members of Gillette's research and development team have spent over 4,700 years combined working to make your shave closer and more comfortable. That's longer than the Egyptian pyramids have been around. And while over 1,000 craftsmen and women in Boston are busy making your blades, another team is putting your blades through more than 60 extremely strict and precise quality checks. Fail just one of these tests, it doesn't leave the factory. So in other words, the hardworking people at Gillette never stop working to make your blades better. And now, that includes the price tag. You can get Gillette blades at their lowest prices in years. See for yourself at GilletteOnDemand.com. Gillette, the best a man can get. Pricing applies to select products and is at the sole discretion of the retailer.
All right. So do you want to talk about this Patriots-Saints game that we've just pooed on?
Yeah, let's get to it. I mean, I guess I don't know. Coming out of it, do you think you found out more that the Patriots offense is still actually really good or that the Saints defense is just the absolute trash of all trash?
Yeah. I do not.
What's the opposite of creme de la creme?
The poo de la crap.
Poo de la crap.
Gross. I regret saying that. I wish I could erase those words that came out of my mouth just now. The poo de la crap is when my dog goes for the third time in a day, and I'm like, really? And then it's just the stuff you really don't want to see. I just don't enjoy watching teams play the Saints defense. It's not fun. I don't feel like it's not exciting to watch the offense. You don't feel like you learn much about the offense. I mean, and the Saints defense is so much worse than I thought it would be, because I really thought at the end of last season they did show some improvement. I really liked Sheldon Rankin's. You know, they seem to be taking a step forward, some of their cornerbacks, and it's just, it feels like it's all gone out the window. I mean, you know, Kenny Vaccaro got benched.
Yes.
Marshawn Lattimore was fine, but the poor linebacker, goodness.
Alex Anzalone.
The long hair. Oh, my God.
I
felt like I should call the cops. That's all I said.
I'm not someone who wants to encourage anyone to cut their hair. I think Alex Anzalone has incredible hair. He should keep it for as long as he possibly can, but just to avoid being picked on by Tom Brady, I think he should have shaved his head at halftime. Just to blend in with other Saints.
So brutal. To go back to your first question, though, about the Patriots offense, it was interesting because it looked different from week one. That's all, you know. Obviously, it looked better, but it also they were, you know, Tom Brady threw a lot more to the running backs and the tight ends than he did in the first week, and it was clearly effective, and I think that's what they're going to have to do all season.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, they're just out of wide receivers. I mean, Tony Romo, who I thought was really good, was talking about it by the end of the game, and he's pointing out that James Devlin is splitting out as a tight end, as a wide receiver, excuse me. Their fullback splitting out as a wide receiver. And not like teams will do that to kind of try and figure out if teams are in man or zone and they won't really throw them the football. Mm-hmm. Like, they were throwing James Devlin, like, comeback routes because he was a wide receiver in their offense. Like, they're so thin at wideout with Danny Amendola being hurt. Philip Dorsett got hurt during this game. Chris Hogan had a knee injury that cost them some snaps here or there. And Gronk was hurt for a stretch of this game and appears to be okay with a groin injury, but they have injuries up and down their roster at receivers. So, I mean, at some point they have to the running back just because they're the only guys left who are healthy. And even them, I think, didn't Rex Burkhead get hurt during this game as well?
Did he? Oh, I was just about to say, you know, that touchdown he had, he was running out of the slot. Yeah. As I recall, that was a very Patriots-y play, and yes. I think that's the kind of thing you would expect to see more of them. He wasn't seriously hurt, was he?
Yeah, he had a rib injury that I think After that first drive or two, I think he was out. He had 8 snaps all game. So maybe he wouldn't have had that much bigger of a role, but I mean, he was limited for sure with the rib injury.
Here, let me ask you, though. Do you feel like you learned anything about the Patriots' defense against that Saints offense?
I did. I learned a couple things about the Patriots' defense. Number one.
What were they?
Dietrich Wise is really good.
Okay, yeah. I'm glad you said his name because I forgot. Right, so the whole thing on the Patriots' defense is they have no pass rush outside of Flowers.
Yeah.
He steps up. Granted, it's one game, and the Saints' offensive line also is a bit diminished. Yeah. But do you feel like he showed a lot of talent enough to potentially help, you know, be a changing force on that defense?
They need something. Realistically, it's not like they need, you know, they don't need to have J.J. Watt. But, like, if they can get Dietrich Wise to look competent, and he had one sack, he had 5 knockdowns of Drew Brees in this game, who doesn't get hit a ton. Drew Brees is a really quick release. I mean, he was getting to the quarterback pretty rapidly. So if you can have that across from Flowers, like, that's a start. It's not going to be the solution, but that gives you something to work with because they looked so bereft at times against the Chiefs in Week 1 and in terms of their defensive ends and their pass pressure. So even given that, yes, the Saints were without their top 2 offensive tackles, again, Teron Armstead and Zach Strief, they had Ryan Ramczyk playing right tackle, Andres Pete started at left tackle, move guys around, you know, sure, that's gonna change things. But if you get something out of those guys, like, that's a start. And I still think they're going to make some moves. I still think they're going to go and either sign someone like Dwight Freeney or Akeem Ayers or trade for, you know, some second round pick who's been a bust on his old team and get that guy pass rush reps. It's just because that's what the Patriots do. And it's going to happen again, you'd figure, over the next couple of weeks. But I really just feel like at some point you have to hope that your own guys are going to develop. And Bill Belichick, over the course of the year, he's been able to do, like, over the course of his career, he's been able to do that. I mean, he gets a lot out of, you know, kind of nondescript young defensive talent who ends up playing a bigger role quicker than we might think. That was the case with Trey Flowers last year. The other thing I thought was interesting was that the Patriots didn't bench Malcolm Butler, but Eric Rowe started this game at cornerback ahead of Malcolm Butler.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, and then Butler ended up playing more snaps than Rowe for a couple of reasons. Rowe got hurt during the game, and Butler, I think, played, you know, given how frequently the Saints were in 3 and 4 wideout sets, he was going to play a lot anyway, but it did seem pretty telling. Like, I've learned strange. Enough from watching Belichick. It is strange. And I've learned enough from watching Belichick long enough now that, like, those hints tend to lead to something. Like, you know, they'll bench Randy Moss and then they'll trade Randy Moss a week later out of nowhere. Like, I'm not saying they're going to necessarily trade Butler, but it did make me think that there was a better chance that something's going to happen than maybe I thought a week ago.
Yeah, and I think Stephon Gilmore played very well. He actually played fine in the first game. He just got blown up once, and it was the classic cornerback gets blown up once and everyone thinks he sucks.
He had one play in this game. Yeah, there was one play, I think, later on where he got beat for one big play, which is fine. It was like 40 yards. It wasn't like the end of the world or anything. But he fell down, and then after the pass was complete, he kind of just didn't get up. And I always feel like this is unfair. Like, you saw this with Zeke Elliott, too, where there was an interception where he didn't chase after the ball player. Like, yeah. I feel like if you watch every NFL, like, not every, but like 90% of NFL players, like, they're not going to give 100% effort on every single play. But because we have access to video now, I think we get a little spoiled in terms of, like, how frequently and how easily it is to identify that from player to player.
And there are obviously extra eyes on him just because it was so unusual for the Patriots to go out and spend that much on that kind of free agent. I think he's talented. Obviously, they have good safeties. So I'm not worried about this pass defense, regardless of what happens with Butler. You know, and it's the, let's see, Breeze. Yeah, he was 4 for 12 on third down. Like, again, there's a little bit of a question, you know, is that the Saints defense? The Saints offense? Is it New England's defense? I think it was a little bit of both on that side of the ball. Breeze, this team's not going to the playoffs, first of all, with that defense. I mean, they're not touching it. The defense is so bad. I mean, there's no way to make it better.
I don't know that I agree with you. They're bad.
Because you think the NFC is so open?
Kinda. I mean, I think just, you have Drew Brees. And when you have Drew Brees, you're going to have a shot at a lot of games. The Vikings are, like, the worst possible matchup for the Saints, especially given that they didn't have Armstead. They lost Strief during the game. Like, that's just an awful matchup for them. And the Patriots are a team that's going to beat you up on, like, Patriots coming off of a loss against this defense is terrible. But I do think they have a better shot than, they have a prayer. They don't have a 0% chance to me. I think that the offense is kind of going to resolve itself. You're going to get Armstead back. You're going to get Strief back.
Snead comes back. It was a 3-game suspension. I think that was, by the way, way bigger than people anticipated in terms of giving Breeze a second option to Thomas.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think the running back situation is a mess. It's going to resolve itself. Maybe with Adrian Peterson leaving. I don't know. It's kind of a disaster. But there is a lot of young talent on the defense. There are guys, like you said, Rankins is a first-round pick from 2016. Anzalone is a rookie playing a second game. Marcus Williams is a rookie second-round pick who's starting. Marshawn Lattimore is a rookie first-round pick starting. Von Bell is a second-round pick from last year who's going to be playing a meaningful role. Those guys are going to get better as the season goes on. I'm not saying they're going to be good. They're definitely not going to be good. I would not want to be held on record saying the Saints are ever going to be good on defense. But I do think they can be better. And if they can be better, they have a prayer with that combined with Breeze. Not a great shot, but a prayer.
Yeah. I mean, they get the Jets. I'm looking at the schedule. I mean, there's a lot of winnable games in the schedule, especially because I've really lost, I think, faith in the Panthers at this point. I don't know. Maybe that's wrong. And it probably is. I mean, I think the Panthers can easily, once Cam kind of regains his strength. And
yeah. The defense, I think, is really good for the Panthers.
For sure. That division is also really interesting because it's not I don't know. It's not clear to me who's going to win it. But anyways, I guess I could see the Saints squeaking in that, in the NFC. Especially the West is so bad. The East doesn't look as competitive as people thought.
I think the East is terrible. I think this is a really bad division.
It's a lot of average teams is how I would describe the East. Like, I don't think any of the teams are trash, but I don't think any of them are good.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I mean, the idea of them squeaking into a wild card spot just does not seem that crazy to me. But they're off to a bad start, and the defense has to get better because it's still every bit as atrocious as you might have been afraid of heading into the season.
They're at Panthers next week. I have no idea who I'm going to pick to win that.
You are so... How'd you do in your picks this week?
Not great. There was a lot of... And most of us went nearly chalk because there were a lot of... Especially the early games were pretty easy to call, but I did really badly. I picked the Packers last night. I don't know. I didn't know both tackles were out.
When do you file your picks?
Thursday. Stinks.
That's tough. That's a tough one. Let me ask you, of the other panelists, who are you most intimidated by in terms of pick knowledge?
Oh, Lewis Riddick shreds everyone. It's not even close. He's so good at this. Yeah. So I'm not even trying to play with the big boys. I just want to finish average.
Who would you be ashamed of finishing below in the picks pool?
Probably my colleague Seth Wickersham, because I've taunted him a lot.
is Pick'em is just the fans, right? It's like a fan consensus.
I don't know how that one works, but I'd like to beat that too.
That's what I was going to say. I think you have to beat the fan consensus if you're going to be considered an expert for expert picks, which is, by the way, why I do not partake in any picks, because I'm terrible at picking games.
Oop, Lenny's going off. I think he's watching the clock.
Do you think Lenny would outpick you in games if Lenny was given the opportunity? Because I am very confident Lenny would outpick me.
You know who would destroy me is my mother, who constantly wins our family's pick'ems every year and easily beats all of the ESPN experts. And I don't know why I just am not copying her. I don't think she would give me her picks because she still wants to win the family pick'em. Mm-hmm. But she is unbelievable at picking games.
Can you please have her on an episode of the Nickel Package picking games? Can I please make that request from you?
That's a good idea. I'll do that.
Love Nickel Package content. Love Synergy at ESPN. Mina,
guys, subscribe.
You got to subscribe to that. But where else can people check out what you're doing?
Lenny's being so loud right now. Yeah, so I'm on the Nickel Package. I'm just doing my usual. I'm on Around the Horn a couple times this week, I think tomorrow and Friday. So listen to me drop these takes.
And you just published something.
Yeah, I did a story on it's very different from Aaron Rodgers. It's on a teenager in Korea, a girl who became the first female professional Overwatch player to play in their top league. And it's about esports and feminism and just all kinds of clickbaity stuff.
Classic ESPN clickbait from Mina Kimes. Mina, thank you so much. I'm sure you'll be back on later on in the season. Probably week 16, I think, is when you'll be on next.
We'll see.
All right, see you later.